Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back for another night in the Passion Pit. This is Jay Michaels. Susan Merson is a name that has been in the industry for a very long time. She has worked in the theater, in film. She is an educator. She is an author. She is also a spiritualist. She utilizes her gifts of working with tarot and other spiritual means with her actors.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yes, it does. We actually have Mary Elizabeth Macari does the exact same thing within her studio. So we're rather lucky. We have two individuals that utilize the inner works to create a much better outer performance. We had an opportunity to speak to Susan, and she's going to regale us in her new book, in her teaching methods, and so much else. And here's Susan.
Hello, hello.
Susan Merson, this is Jay Michaels. If I'm on the line, then you're on the air.
Oh, my goodness. Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. It's a little cold. No big deal.
Well, it's November. What are you going to do?
Right.
This is a chance for me to tell all our listeners about the brilliance that you do. And when I say brilliance, I'm not overreaching. You're one of those artists who espouse to the way I think art should be. You do not say, oh, I'm an actress, oh, I'm a director, oh, I'm a producer. You're all of it. You take your art and let it fly in every direction.
Thank you.
And I know of you initially as an actress and a director and an artistic director, but now I'm hearing you're an author, that you work spiritually, that mm-hmm. you deal in the tarot, and obviously you're also an educator in how you deal with your actors. Please tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've recently come across this phrase called the multi-passioned entrepreneur and the multi-passioned art entrepreneur. And I guess that's true. And because it all comes from the same place, of course, which is trying to find what's really real and truly true. So more recently, yes, I have years of being an actress, and then that moved into being a playwright, and then that moved into being a producer, because, of course, it's very difficult to get your work on unless you do it yourself.
There you go.
And then from being a playwright and producing it myself, I then started running theaters because, of course, I needed to run the theater so that I could get the plays produced, et cetera.
Well
and
said.
Along the road, of course, I was lucky enough, very lucky, to be able to start teaching. And when I started teaching at Cal State Fullerton in playwriting, I really discovered that being an artist is very, very multidimensional. And as my work as an artist grew in all these different areas, it also started growing intuitively. And I've been in the closet for many years about this, but recently I've decided to sort of come out into the world and admit and popularize the idea that in my work with people, I love to use the tarot and I love to use intuitive tools. When you're struggling with what the next step is in a character and how something emerges or grows, or when you're struggling with the storyline or an arc of a play or of a character, sometimes knowing how to access that next step has got to be quiet. It can't be necessarily for everyone just writing and writing and writing till you go out of your mind. So I started throwing cards for some of my clients, and I found that it really opens up both their own experience as writers and their own experience as creators. It leads us back to that intuitive, quiet place where, you know, the Buddhists call it nothingness, where everything exists, where there is no duality, which is the fifth dimension or however you want to do that.
Indeed.
That's always really a part of all artistic work, but I specifically now am doing a lot more tarot readings and consultations with everybody, but certainly with artists, to sort of experience and explore this life path. What is next? What are you? What energy is in the universe for you? And what are you putting out? And what can you receive? And how can you receive it more?
Now you probably
openly.
We're going to have listeners who are going to go, "Oh, an innovative idea!" But this is ancient. This is eons old. This notion of reaching to another reality to find what's in our own.
Oh, of course. Of course. It's the ultimate of storytelling. I'm reading a great book, once again, by a guy by the name of David Loy, which is called The World is Made of Stories. And, you know, we story ourselves into existence. We create the story of our lives as human beings, whether or not we're artists or not, whether or not we do it consciously as writers or artists or actors or painters. We do this in order to create a landscape in which we exist. And so all of the ways in which we make that solid within this realm are expressions of our being in this realm. Sometimes we get a little bit lost in the material and hard scrapple world, whatever that word is, scrabble world that we live in. And it's important, especially as artists, to recognize that there's something that's not palpable in terms of touching it in your hand, but is just as palpable in the energetic world. And this is, you know, it's so true in a lot of the spiritual work that's happening now as we move to this next ascension, so to speak, to try to move past some of the nonsense that we've been caught in and, you know, represented by our government, forgive me, but there we are.
That's a four-letter word, yes.
Yeah, and the chaos that exists. Mm-hmm. And so we, if we're artists, we certainly have to be leaders in this. If we're human beings, we have to recognize that it's something verbal and nonverbal.
You bring up something very interesting. You bring up very interesting when you talk about tapping into ourselves. This goes back to the eon-old question. Are we governing our future? Like when you throw down a card, am I hoping that card is going to be a certain thing to show me a path to go? Or is there some great, is there something ordained? Is the future a math equation where you press equals and there's an answer that's already preordained? Or are we guiding your hand when you show us our future?
Right. Everything's possible, right? Everything's possible. We live in a possible universe. When you pull a card, you've asked a question, and a card will tell you what the energetic is at this moment. Okay. So let's say you pull a card and, you know, you're going to talk about going to the gym and will you be able to lift a 10 pound weight today? And if the card strength comes up, you're going to say, oh yeah, I guess I'm strong enough to do that. If the card, if the nine of the swords comes up with worry, I'm going to say to you, well, gee, maybe not today. Because what this card is showing me is that there may be some worry or concern about doing that at this point.
Do we stop then? Do we stop then? If you throw down a card and the answer is don't do it yet, should I not do it or should I say, you know what, I'm still going to try?
Well, you can do, you know, everyone has free will. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that's preordained. We create our own stories. We create our own lives. So that when you do tarot cards, it's not predictive, it's intuitive. So it's not that there's something preordained except for, you know, like the great God above us, you know, maybe has a path for us that we chose when we decided to come into the planet. But and what our job is, you know, the meaning of life is to try to find the meaning of life. somebody smart said. But cards, you know, people think it's all woo-woo and weird. It's not. It's not predictive. It's intuitive. That is, the cards will pick up the energetic that you're creating. Uh-huh. And you can then work with that, you know, and you can ask for a clarifier and you can ask the question a different way. And so the cards in a very Talmudic way sort of create the conversation. You know, they say, oh, well, gee, that's interesting. Okay, well, on this hand, I have this information, and on this hand, I have this information. And I remember going years ago to a conversation with Joseph Campbell, the great Joseph Campbell, and at a bookstore. And wow. Somebody said to him, do you believe in tarot cards? And do you believe in horoscopes and, you know, all that stuff and, you know, astrological stuff? And he said, well, of course not, but I'll be goddamned if it's not right.
Okay.
So what he is saying is, you know, scientifically, well, maybe not, but, you know, it's just another tool in the arsenal of trying to understand our experience. And that's how I like to approach it. And I think that what the reader does is the reader brings the openness of the channel, right? What a good reader will do is be available to the energetic that's going, you know, that's running through us, just like Reiki energy or something like that.
So we sort of prepare ourselves in a way. If I was going to a reading, if I'm going to speak to you and I'm in a terrible mood, I'm walking in with a very particular feeling that you might pick up on. But if I'm confident when I walk in, you're able to see another facet of me because of that.
Well, yeah, it depends. But I mean, you know, you put your energies into the cards and we'll see what the cards come up with.
Right, right.
You know, but, and you know, I have had readings, God, that go on for fucking, excuse my language, forever, forgive me, that keep saying, oh, yes, 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 this book will be published. You will get this part. Yes, yes, yes. And then, of course, you don't get the part, and the book doesn't get published. And you think, well, what's that about? What's that about? And you have to kind of decide what that is about. And I think it has something to do with the energetic behind the project. The project may have a very strong clarity to it. But the next question is, will this project exist in a commercial world? Will it work in a commercial world? So that's the next part of the question, you know?
So when we have a project, we just can't say, this is a great work of art. We have to say, this is a great work of art, and will the audience like it? Will there be an audience?
If you want the audience to like it.
Oh, that's very good.
If you want the audience to like it. I mean, you know, there are a lot of us who say, you know, like I sort of gave up on working on television because I just decided, well, you know, I'm not going to spend the last 20 years of my life kind of doing, being somebody else's visual cue, you know. So I decided for myself that it wasn't right for me. That doesn't negate the world. It just negates my interest and role in it. You know what I mean? So I made a decision not to do that. So we have to give value to what it is we feel is appropriate. And then the cards can help us to figure out ways in which that works, or if it's wrongheaded, or, you know, how does that affect our lives? I found them to be remarkably accurate and remarkably friendly. No reader will ever tell you disaster. No reader will ever tell you you're going to die or you're dead or, you know, only forgive me the gypsies who are, you know, have the storefronts who are making a living, you know, telling you that you should come back for the special reading and the voodoo chant.
Those are the guys
who are trying to make money on it. That's very different than the, you know, the way of just doing intuitive tarot readings.
So we need to see the world in terms of looking at something. We can't just, okay, yes, and you will lose 10 pounds and be tall and blonde. Okay, great,
you know,
thank you.
Right, exactly, sure.
Interesting. We're talking about work. Yeah. We're talking about all these things now. Now, we know about, as you've mentioned, you're an actress, a director, and a producer. You are also an author, and that's like wildfire right now with you. What's going on with you in terms of that?
Well, it's exciting. I've been teaching playwriting for years, and I started, and also creative writing. And I wrote my first novel, my fiction first novel, in 2009. And but most recently, I.
How do you feel when we say that? I'm sorry. I remember the 80s. I remember the 70s. So when you say, "Oh, way back in 2009," I feel like I'm in a science fiction movie already. Well, way back
in
2009.
Please. I know we won't even talk about that, but you know. Jay, we live in a different world than when we grew up. It's happening so quickly.
Yep.
And when I wrote that book, I went to Breadloaf and they said, "Oh, it's so wonderful." Breadloaf is a writer's retreat. Mm-hmm. So wonderful, but we have a new way of marketing now, and they suggested to me that I create my own press and just put it in the world because it wasn't edgy enough or social media savvy enough to get a coming-of-age novel to work, which I did. I created a press called Block Press. And so the first novel called Dreaming in Daylight came out in 2009, and it's a coming-of-age story about my my dad was an entrepreneur. He was an impresario during World War II in Italy and produced grand opera during the war.
Had
a great romance with a woman who turned out to be a spy. This was always the family lore. So I created a novel that kind of talks about that and about what it was to grow up with those myths. and it's called Dreaming in Daylight. And I just recently did it on Audible. So I'm creating, I'm bringing my acting chops to bear on my own work, and it's great fun. And then I have a couple.
See, that's what I'm talking. That's what I'm talking about. You take your art and you throw it out there, and so now we have this. Wow, this adventure story, which happened to be your dad's life, and now you are performing it. I think that's terrific. What else going on?
I have a new novel that I'm shopping around, which is called Wabi Sabi, which is all about a person learning to live in this moment as opposed to the moments before them, and that should come out in the spring. I believe it's going to be called Oh Good Now This, and that should be coming out in the spring. And I'm also writing a book on writing, which is called Voicing, which is based on my many years of teaching. All of that, and along with my my textile design stuff that I've been doing for years, which is SAS Quilts, where I make upcycled coats and jackets and quilts and things.
I saw that on Facebook a while ago, and I thought, am I looking at the same person? Wow, is there anything she's not doing?
Multi-passioned entrepreneur. That's
there you
the name
go.
Of the game.
There you go.
So, but mostly right now, I'd love to focus on giving some on coming out of the closet as an intuitive, and doing more tarot readings for artists and others. And folks can contact me through my website, SusanMerson.com.
I'm definitely going to tell. I'm definitely going to put that in the actual piece, so the audience can have a link as to where they go. Where do you? Here's an interesting thing, because half of my life is this also. Where do you advertise such a thing in terms of being an intuitive? Where? How do you tell people? How do you tell people what you do other than word of mouth? What do you do? What do you say? Or where?
Jay Michaels. I call Jay Michaels. I'm just learning that. I think there are spiritual communities. I think, you create an online presence that has this as an aspect. I think you probably get some gigs, at festivals or things like that, where there's a lot of people that come through, and give out cards like crazy. And then ultimately it's got to be word of mouth, and there's some possibility. There's a couple sites online that you can do it on, but I don't know about that myself.
Now you just combined it again. You read cards at the play Divination, right, which was at the American Theater of Actors for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
How did that go? How was it to do that?
It was great fun. I met two wonderful women who we ended up being friends with, and they came to my tarot workshop at Rachel Pollack's up in Rhinebeck the next day.
Ah.
So that worked out. That worked out pretty well. It was pretty nice.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I think that's one of the ways you do it. You put yourself out there, and the trouble is when you it's hard, like anything else. If you place yourself in a quote-unquote party atmosphere, then people think this is a party trick, and that's okay, but it isn't a party trick. It's something more important than that. So I'm learning about where I put the word out, and I'm talking to as many people as possible. I'm putting it on. I think I'll make a Facebook page, and I'll maybe do a couple of Facebook Live readings to see. I've been doing a lot of studying on the internet. There's some wonderful women who have been reading on the political situation in the world from all over the world. And boy, is it interesting to work off of intuitive hits on people from Australia and, all over the world. Incredible.
We're seeing that. We're seeing women take their rightful place lately. It's a very powerful, very moving moment to see that the people who've been pushed into the shadows by all the wrong people are finally getting a chance to be in the spotlight, which is wonderful.
Well, there's no other way. I mean, listen, let's not mince words here. We're in end times. We're looking at. Raking is not going to stop the wildfires, okay, Mr. President?
Mm-hmm.
I lived in California for many years, and P.S., it's all federal land that was burning. But, our willingness to be brave and look at what's really real and truly true is on the line right now because our lives are on the line.
That's right.
This is not, you know, an idle activity. When I first started spiritual work about 25 years ago, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, in 20 years, things are going to really be hot and you have to be prepared and blah, blah, blah. And there was a lot of spiritual work that went on in the last 10, 15 years that prepared a group of people who were drawn to this work, to clarity, to getting clearer and to getting smarter about being able to see what is really real. So that we can help and lead during this time. And the question is, how do we lead? You know, I mean, some of us will read cards, some of us will run for office, some of us will, you know, just talk to three people in their living room. But somehow, and I think one of the things that I'm really trying to do with all this work is, okay, I got some information here. I'm a wise woman at this age. And I'm sort of saying to the universe, okay, I'm ready to put this out there. And I have all these wonderful ways in which I've been given these gifts. So, you know, I'm now putting it out there to the universe. So, universe, tell me what, you know, tell
and
me what's
going to
happen.
And what's going to happen?
Yeah.
There are many like you, I'm happy to say, who are growing, who are diversifying their talents and bringing them out to the world. Now, you talked about 20 years ago, they said something. What's going to happen 20 years from now?
Right. Well, God knows. I really don't know. But I think that we are volitional beings. We are in charge of our own fate. And that's why the rise of the women's of the feminine is very important,
mm-hmm.
because we have got to get past this linear idea that money and straight lines are going to solve our issues. They're not.
Right.
You know, and you know, that's really real. You know what I mean? I mean, the burning fire is going to come to you, the Mr. Banker. Not that it's not important, but somehow we have got to understand that it's our actions that create our reality. And it's very tough when you're one person. You think, oh, geez, how do I, you know, what do I do? Well, you start with yourself. You know, that's the clearest. You start with yourself. You be as clear as you can. You put it out there as best you can. And then you hope that the universe will say yes to you in terms of, okay, that's the thing you should be doing. And if not, you just keep doing it because the next thing will happen and the next thing will happen.
There you go.
That's the search. That's what I'm on, you know, and I'm not dead yet. So that's the idea.
I think that's wonderful. And I judge every conversation I make. If I can hang up the phone and say, wow, I just learned something, then I know it was successful. And wow, I just learned something.
You're a doll.
That's great. Thank you so much for this. I will tell our readers about your novels, about your website and everything like that. And it is
great.
An absolute pleasure speaking to you.
As always, thank you so much, Jay.
My pleasure.
Be
My
well.
Pleasure. We will talk soon. Ciao.
Okay, thanks. So long. Bye.
Thank you, Susan Merson, for that enlightening conversation. Speaking of enlightening conversation, I'd like to invite Mary Elizabeth Macari to elaborate on her teaching methods and her work in the spiritual realm. As long as she's here, we'd love to hear from another expert.
Well, I'm not in the spiritual realm. I'm actually on the astral, not on the astral plane. I'm on the, you know, material plane with you. So.
Oh, well, your work with... why don't you tell us all about what you do?
I don't work on the spiritual plane. That's where ghosties are and enlightened beings, no, or dead people. So no, what I've done as a voice teacher and as a spiritual teacher, I teach different things. I teach tarot. I've been teaching tarot for on and off for years. I teach other esoteric things like paganism studies and meditation and some astrology. For beginners, so those things I teach, as well as sound healing and Reiki. So how I do this as a voice teacher and is probably similar to what Susan does. I just when I have a we have cats in the studio, by the way. This one's name is Rosencrantz. We have Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in the studio, both from Hamlet, and yes, both still alive. So that's, if you hear Rosencrantz crying in the background, it's just because he wants some fancy feast. Anyway, so. As a voice teacher, I use sometimes tarot, not necessarily. I use something called soul cards. which I also use in tarot reading. I don't say tarot. I say tarot. So we have different ideas of how to say things.
Potato, potato.
Yeah, tarot cards, Americanized. I do read privately for people. I have done that for years and years. I've done that for 40 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, been reading tarot cards forever. My grandmother actually taught me how to read cards out of the playing cards that she used to throw. This throwing of cards makes me upset too. What do you mean throw cards? How do you throw a card? Nobody throws cards. You put them on the table.
Well, some people, you know, they do with the wrist.
That's a bunch of crap.
All right.
So what my grandmother showed me with playing cards was how to read them a bit to do some fortune telling. And from that point on, I began to start to study that. And then I ended up studying tarot cards at about 13 years old. Actually, my mother burnt my first deck of tarot cards in the barbecue.
Wow.
Because she was super Catholic and was really afraid that I was going to be possessed by the same devil that got into whatever her name was in The Exorcist.
Linda Blair!
Linda Blair. Right. Whatever the character's name is. I forget her name. Anyway, so I went and got another deck of tarot cards and kept them secretly in my mattress so she wouldn't get them and kept working on them. So over all these years, I've been reading cards for myself and for other people. I happen to have found a really interesting, cool tarot teacher. When I was a bartender back in the prehistoric times in the late 20th century, I had a woman come in every single day, and she had been a tarot reader for many, many, many years. And she said to me, do you read cards? And I showed her how, and she goes, oh, you're so stiff. It's ridiculous what you're doing. It's by the book. So she would come in every day, and we'd just go through cards. And she'd say, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see? Not what is in the card, not what's the symbol. She'd say, what do you see? And she taught me to open up really a psychic connection with those cards. So thank you to her. Her name was Constance, and don't have seen her since. But she was a great card teacher. She'd get a little brandy, and we'd sit and do cards for hours. So in the quiet time in the bar before dinner. So that's my experience with that kind of teaching. Anyway, how do I use it with students? I really rarely use tarot cards with students. I feel like that's invasive, so I wouldn't do that. I do ask my students if they would be willing for me to do their astrological chart. And if they are, that does help me teach because I can see the different ways they might think based on some placements in their charts, specifically with the planet of Mercury and their sun sign. And see how exactly, also their Mars, how they do stuff, how they get things done and accomplished. And different parts of the chart tell you different things about people. Your sun sign is the least of anything. So, but that's one of the things I do. And I was talking before about soul cards. I use something called soul cards. And you can find those on Amazon. They're beautiful paintings that were done. And I don't have the name in front of me of the person who drew them. And I will look for that. We'll put that in the information on the podcast here so you can find them. And I'll put a link in there for you to look at them because they're quite beautiful. And what those do is you pull a card out, any card, and you say to yourself, well, what does this mean to me? And I use those when a student is very stuck and you get some very interesting and very cool answers from those cards for people who are stuck artistically, sometimes in a song or if they are blocked up and afraid to perform. What I generally do mostly with my students is stuff like meditation, chanting. I went and I studied sound healing for a year at the Open Center in New York City and with various and wonderful experienced sound healers and teachers from all around the world. And I learned a lot of different techniques from meditation to chanting to using tuning forks to using a harmonium, which is like a piano and an accordion all in one, to opening chakra centers by using different bead sounds in the body and with the voice, et cetera, et cetera. And working with chakras and notes and color, all of that stuff. So those things I do use very often in my teaching with singers. With actors, I don't generally do any of that stuff. I think actors are already working in a spiritual place, trying to inhabit a character, which they seem to be bringing from another plane sometimes. The only thing I like to do with actors as a teacher is sort of clear the channel so that they can have a chance to open up to whatever character, being, thing, energy, whatever force they want to call it. I don't care. So that I do. With students. But I don't read cards in lessons But I will outside of. I do also use sometimes when a person is sick or has some blockages and they want me to, only with permission, I can do Reiki. I'm a Reiki master. It's a third degree Reiki master. So I can do Reiki for people in their throats and their lungs or any place else. And sometimes my students will actually forego a lesson and just have a Reiki session if they're working on a project. So
when you talk about music, when you talk about bringing in sounds for sound healing, I guess it's almost like when we hear a song and we suddenly remember, you know, the first time we heard it, or if it's a something romantic to us or something sweet, it's like an emotion wells up in us. Simple notes, simple sounds do the same thing to us.
No, they're a little bit different because if you have it depends on the vowel you're using and the sound you're using. Every vowel has a different vibrational frequency. Every frequency does different things within the body and in the mind mm-hmm. as well. So just by changing the shape of a vowel, even on the same note, say we're on middle C, you can sing ah or E and it will have a different kind of a vibration. And that vibration will change something inside of your body. Remember, we're a very large portion of us. I think it's 85% of us is water. And if you've ever seen online, the lovely things about music and water, there's lots and lots of videos where they play water, the speaker underneath some water, and the water actually changes shapes based on the note that they're playing underneath it, the vibration.
Oh.
So notes are not something that just is something it's a vibration. Every note, all music, all sound is vibration. That's what it is. So when you hum a note or sing a note on a vowel, you're going to get a certain vibration. If you change the vowel a little bit, you're going to change the vibration some. So that's what that's about. And when people chant or do spiritual chanting, that's what they're working at. They may use a name of a goddess, say, for example, in Hindu, a Durga, that's a goddess, but the ooh, ah sound changes the way you're vibrating her and bringing her in. And people believe that if you say her name, that you're bringing in her very essence.
Wow.
So and words have power. As a matter of fact, you know, we talk about that Hebrew magic or the Hebrew alphabet itself is based on numbers. And that is based on vibration and also power and energy in each and every sound. So that's how it works.
You had mentioned something when you spoke about creating someone's star chart.
Mm-hmm.
And you said about their sun signs, the least of things. What goes into reading a star chart like that? Because many of us we don't get past the horoscopes in the newspaper. So
right,
what goes into looking over such a piece of material?
Well, it's first of all not called a star chart. There's not such thing as a star chart. It's your astrological chart, and what that is looking at the position of the planets in the sky the moment you took your first breath on this earth. So what that is you have a position of the sun, right? When that's like saying I'm a Leo or Jay's a Sagittarius or whatever, somebody's a Virgo, that's the constellation that was overhead in the sky at the moment you were born. Also, the moon, where was the moon? What sign was the moon in that day? What sign was Mars itself in based on where you were on the planet? Also, don't forget that has a lot to do with longitude and latitude of where you were born, where you took your first breath. Mars, Venus, Mercury is another one, by the way, is very important for our how we express ourselves, how we think. And each planet has different meanings. So like Mars is how you do things, how things get done. That's a very, 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 very cut down version of what it is. That's just one version of what Mars does.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an idea of what Mars does. And so you look at a planet in Mars, a sign in Mars, Mars is the planet, and you interpret it from there. And then you see what house it is. The astrological sky is divided up into 12 different sections, or what we call houses. And all those houses have different meanings. So it's very complex astrology, which you get in the newspaper. And this is why a lot of people say, I don't believe in astrology. You don't believe in astrology because you don't know anything about it. You don't know anything about it if you're reading a newspaper.
Right.
And you're saying, oh, today Leo will have, you know, cut their toenails. You know, that has nothing to do, it has nothing to do with anything. It's just one tiny piece of things. And not all Leos are the same, nor will they be born at the same time. And within each sign, by the way, there's three pieces. There's three sections of time within each and every sign.
Right, right.
So ridiculous. So no, that's what a quote star chart or astrology chart is. And how I use that when I teach is by looking at a person and saying, okay, where are these planets for you? How can I help you to see or understand what your blockages are? That's a lot of the times, most of what I do as a voice teacher say, okay, you can sing, but why can't you sing on stage? Well, why are you afraid? Or why are you afraid to interpret music freely? What is the blockage? So more than not, I'm working with fear issues and blockages and looking at the astrological chart to see where there's blockages. So that's an answer.
That is very intense. That is way very intense. Yeah, how many of us are sitting there going, wait a minute, I looked in the newspaper, it said I'm going to make money today.
That's not even doing it, by the way. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Oh. By the way, before that happened in England, that's where it started, I'm 99% sure, having a daily horoscope. But it first started with your rising sign, because your rising sign, which is one of the most important parts of your chart, that tells us what sign was rising on the horizon the moment you were born. So in my case, it was Sagittarius, right? So that's what was there. So that's important as a performer, because that's how people see you. That's the first thing they experience, is your rising sign. That's your personality or your outward. It's like your coat, what you wear outside. So that is how they used to do astrology in the mid-1800s in the newspapers in England, was by rising sign, because it's your outward personality. What will happen today to your outward personality, which in that I might even be more accurate, because it's like, what's going to happen today? Well, how will people see you today? You know, that might be much more fun. Your sun sign, you keep only for those most intimate with you. We don't ever really see a sun sign.
That's very interesting. We see so many books where it says that, so we think that's the predominant thing. Really interesting. I gauge interviews, as I mentioned to Susan, by if I learned something, and I most certainly did.
Well, thank you.
Mary, thank you very much. That was really, really enlightening. I want to thank you all for joining us today for this special spiritual and astrological episode of Passion Pit. And we will be back with, in our next installment, with an interview with David Sabella. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Have a good day or night. Bye.